Welcome to episode 71 of the Running on Om podcast with Sally McRae, professional trail ultra runner, endurance sports coach, and mother. I first heard Sally being interviewed on Trail Runner Nation, one of my favorite podcasts to tune into, and knew I wanted to have her on the Running on Om podcast so that she could share her incredible story and perspective with the Running on Om community. Definitely check out Trail Runner Nation. It is a vast library of podcasts with many different trail and ultra runners. Also, last week Running on Om published its first Yoga for Runners video on the Running on Om YouTube channel. It's an almost 40-minute video that's meant to be a dynamic cool-down for runners post-run or on an easy day focused on opening up the hips and elongating the side body. Check it out and let me know what you think. If you've listened to at least 3 podcasts and want to help more like-minded people find the Running on Om podcast, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. It'll take less than 2 minutes and make a world of difference. I'm also always open to feedback or questions, and I encourage you to leave your comments on our Facebook page. Let's jump into the show with Sally. In this episode, Sally discusses her background in athletics, from collegiate soccer to training for her first marathon. Why Sally was drawn to the trails and the 100-mile distance specifically. The biggest personal challenge she has overcome. Recounts of her 3 100-miler experiences. How Sally has overcome mental and physical challenges in all 3 of 100-milers. Reflections on her recent top 10 finish at the Western States 100-mile and 3 things she would do differently in her training for Western States next year. Who inspires Sally? How she balances motherhood, training, and coaching. Sally's relationship with yoga revealed. Upcoming projects and races on her schedule. All this and more on this episode of the Running on Om podcast. Om. Welcome, Sally, to the Running on Om podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So when did you first lace up your shoes and decide to go on a run?
Let's see. I started running when I was 7 years old. I come from a really big family, and all of us, my parents were really into soccer. So we all played soccer. We ventured into gymnastics and other things like that. But there are some small little city races that my parents entered me in, and quickly found out that that was my niche. I love running fast, so I would do these short little like 1K races and whatnot. And when I was 7, I even got to be in the local newspaper with my little medals for winning some local races. But that's kind of when I started and when I really fell in love with it. But I didn't really take it seriously till, goodness, after college, because I actually chose to be a soccer player. And I played soccer for 20 years and even a little bit after college. So it's always been a way for me to keep, you know, stay in shape. And, you know, I did races here and there, and I did track and field when I was in high school. I thought anything past 800 meter was insane, way too long. But everything was, the reason for running was always the goal to be a better soccer player, to be faster, to be fitter.
What was that transition like for you from going from being on soccer teams throughout your life to then graduating from college and running as a more of a solitary sport? How did you handle that?
You know, I'll have to say initially it felt like it was a big change, because soccer is a team sport. And so you are constantly training with a group of, you know, I was constantly training with a group of women that we would encourage one another. We went through the highs and lows together. We were winning and losing. You know, you just, you do everything together. You're out there sweating together. And there's something that's just, it makes for a completely different experience when you know that when it's time to come and go and compete, that you are competing with your team, that you are supporting your team and your performance. You know, you have 10 other players depending on your performance while you're on that field. So, you know, then transitioning into running, it was such a solo sport, you know, and even towing the line, I wasn't a part of running groups or a team or anything like that, but, you know, I'd go to these races and I'd tow the line and I realize what a single person sport this was. And It was very different. Really, the dynamics were different. My training was different. You know, I never ran with people when I trained. I mean, sporadically here and there, it was kind of a treat to be able to run with a friend. But, you know, I found that the more that I ran, I was spending a lot of time by myself and, you know, getting in my head and things like that. But what I liked about it is I learned a lot about myself. You know, you're kind of forced to go on these runs, and whether it's in the quiet or you throw on music, whatever, you start to use that time to think about the world around you and just kind of why am I running? But the real reason why I was doing that was because from college, I got a job, you know, I had become a grown up, and I got married when I just turned 23. So I was really young. And so I was doing all these grown up things, and I still wanted to be active. I've always been a competitive athlete my whole life. And so running was something that was really simple. I could do it on my own time. I could do it anywhere, required very little gear. And I was still able to set up goals for myself and compete. And I love that. Fell in love with that.
I know that you first did road racing, but what attracted you to ultras? How did you make that jump from running a marathon to then running 50 to 100 miles in races?
Yeah, those are huge jumps. You know, when I first started road running, which was in 2002, gosh, yeah, so that's 12 years ago. And then I started trail running or ultra marathoning in 2010. So it's really only been 4 years that I've been in the ultra scene. But the jump between the two is just me wanting to challenge myself a little bit more. You know, I found that I really loved the marathon distance. I loved the idea of being out there for a long period of time. I liked how it challenged me, but one of the things that really got me into ultra running and trail running was just reading articles. I loved Runner's World, and I think they're scattered around Runner's World magazine and both online. I would read about this trail running, and I love the outdoors. I love the mountains. I love the idea of being in the quiet and just kind of experiencing, you know, the environment in a different way. And so the trail running became really intriguing to me. And then I started reading about these crazy distances, you know, 50 miles, 100 miles. And I just thought, wow, that's incredible. Like, why would you do that? You know, all the same questions that everyone asks today, you know, still I would ask too. Like, that's just only lunatics must do that. And that can't be good for your body. But, you know, since I was a little girl, I've loved to do things that are just that at first I don't believe are possible to do. And I think that proving that anything is possible is a pretty exciting way to live our lives. And obviously if it's within reason, you know, not doing anything that's going to harm yourself. But I just felt like this was an opportunity to further widen my passion for running and kind of see what else was out there. And lo and behold, I fell in love with it. And it was actually that it then became the distances that I could really compete at. And I found out that I was really good at road marathoning. Go ahead.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think the longer distances, the ultra running? Because, I mean, I know at least for myself, when I'm on trails, you're using totally different muscle groups. The physicality of it is such a different experience than on road marathoning. Obviously, the endurance is another component. So what do you think about you as an athlete has made you so strong in the longer distance?
In the longer distances, I feel like your body has to be stronger because it has to hold up for – it has to hold up against several other factors. So like road running, it's, you know, typically road running, it's on a flat, most courses are a flat road, and your body's doing the same thing over and over again. Now, that's not to say it's not hard on your body. It absolutely is, and your body needs to be strong. However, on the trails, I really like the variety of the terrain and the different challenges that I would encounter every couple miles or even every couple hundred yards, and that continues for the course of 50 miles. But what that does, it forces you to have to use everything, every single muscle in your body is used, it's maxed out. But even beyond that, the mental side of the sport becomes a very important component of racing, and especially the longer the distances. My favorite distance is the 100 miles, and you know this. It is definitely a test of mental toughness. And I think for me to get out onto a course and where I am going to be challenged in every possible way, that I know I'm going to be out there all day, and the relentlessness of that distance and what it does to me emotionally, physically, mentally, it's pretty incredible. And I like to challenge my body in that way. So I think that's why I was good at that. I think I'm naturally strong. My body's always genetically, my body's been pretty muscular since I was a little girl. So climbing mountains is kind of my cup of tea. I love doing that. But also I've had, just growing up, you know, I didn't grow up, with an easy life, so to speak. And so I learned at a young age how to work really hard, how to grow through certain trials and challenges that I have encountered many times in my life. And it's amazing how those have transferred into the races for me, where I hit dark patches or I'm hurting or I don't want to continue. And then I then remember just things about my life that I've been able to overcome, and that always propels me forward. So
what do you say is the biggest personal challenge that you've overcome?
The biggest personal challenge, I think, was losing my mom. She died at a really young age, when she was 43 years old. She had breast cancer, and our family wasn't very well off. We never had health insurance or anything. So when they found the cancer, she was already, they diagnosed it as being terminal. And that was just really tough, you know, being in high school, it's just a really sensitive time in a girl's life. And there was five kids, and at that time I was working towards some goals in my life. I really wanted to get a soccer scholarship, and I'd actually wanted to go to the Olympics for soccer. So I was, you know, really focusing on that. But, you know, like I had said earlier, our family didn't have much growing up. So during that time, I was also working a couple jobs and just doing everything I could to help contribute, but also try to keep my life balanced and even off the fact that I was losing my mom. And so all that to say, I knew that when she passed away, I had the choice. I had the choice to either act like a victim and just be sad and mope around and kind of blame the world for my pain, or I was going to grow and become stronger because of it. And, somehow, some way I that's what I chose. I chose, I'm going to use this and I'm going to be stronger because of it. I'm going to overcome it. And so I call upon that a lot. And she was a very strong woman herself. And so I think when I hit dark patches and races and stuff, I remember that. I remember certain things that she did, even when she was sick and dying, that were very selfless and just really exposed the amazing, strong character that she had. And so it just helps me believe in myself too. You know, if she could do that on her deathbed, then I can do this when I'm out here running just 100 miles in a healthy body.
That's really beautiful that you can almost carry on the legacy of your mom through your running and channel that strength. That's awesome.
When
you look at the 100 milers you've done, what for you stands out as probably the most challenging, mentally challenging one that you've had?
Gosh, you know, at first it was the, I'd say all of them have had some pretty intense obstacles in them. In 2012, I did AC 100, Angeles Crest 100, and I did not realize, but a couple weeks before the race, I thought that I was getting just like a bad shin splint on my right leg. And lo and behold, it wasn't until about halfway into the race that I realized my leg was actually fractured. I had fractured the anterior tibialis. But I had, you know, and having little children and how hard I had trained for that race, my heart was just like, I can't give up. I've given so much of myself and have devoted so much time and energy to training for this race for so many months. I don't care if it hurts with every step, and it did. You know, skeletal injuries are just terrible because, you know, unlike a muscle injury where you can kind of like change your running gait or like do a little bit to kind of soften the blow with every step, every time that bone had any weight put on it, it was so painful. And I was racing at that time, but I chose to still finish. I still got a fourth place finish in that, but finished a lot. You know, it took me a lot longer than I wanted and had to cross the finish line and go right into crutches. But that was really challenging, and that was my introduction to that distance. It broke my heart. But because of that, because I chose to kind of venture through, and I know a lot of listeners are going to think, you know, that's crazy. Why would you do that? You could further injury or whatever. I think knowing my body at that time, I knew what I could handle. I know it wasn't an organ issue, you know, failing kidneys or anything like that. And I knew I would heal, and I did. I'd take a couple months off, but I healed. And I've been able to recall that that race so many times in training and in other races. And the next 100 mile that I did was last year. It's called Run Rabbit Run 100. And it is, I was again competing in the elite race, and that race is split into two. Well, we start at noon and they don't allow us to have pacers. So I'm in the middle of Colorado in these Colorado mountains, and it starts snowing. It's at 1 a.m. and I get terribly lost. I mean, so lost. I arrive at this aid station, everybody's asleep, and I wake up the head aid station volunteer, and he says, "You're in first place." And I look at him and I say, "No, I'm not. I'm not in first place." But I come to find out I was about 8 miles off course, and in order for me to fix my mistake, I would have added 23 miles onto the 100-mile distance. So they disqualified me right there on the spot, put me in a truck and drove me down to the start, and I was devastated, and I was begging him, please, please let me correct my mistake, and they said no. And so that was my second experience at 100, and I was really saddened by that. And then my third time at 100 was just a few weeks ago a month ago, Western States 100.
You did really well at.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It wasn't the race of my dreams. I did have some struggles in that as well. But I'd say that the biggest challenge there was I'd taken a step and I did something to my knee. And so I ran in quite a bit of pain for about 20 miles. Since my last two hundreds, I'm now sponsored by Nike. And so, you know, there's a little bit more pressure to want to perform well and want to place really well. And so, I was pretty upset because I was pretty far outside of the competition for this race. And, I came into my aid station, my crew is just incredibly supportive. They were like, "Sally, you know, hang in there. You're not that far behind." And I was like, "No, it's fine. You know, I blew out my knee. I don't know what's wrong with it." And I told one of the guys on my crew, like, "Hey, I want you to look up on YouTube. These are my symptoms. There's sites on YouTube that show you how to tape up a knee." And I had the K-tape and all that good stuff ready. And I said, "At the next aid station, let's tape it up and let's see, you know, if we can take the edge off this pain that I'm feeling." And I was also able to pick up a pacer at that time. And I, you know, that next section, I didn't see them for 6 miles. And I really got into a really dark spot. I was just really frustrated with how my day was going, with my performance. And somewhere in there, I had to remind myself that, you know, I had this whole crew of guys that have come out that have devoted their weekend to making sure that I have a great race, that are encouraging me, that have supported me for years. And this race has to be so much more than about myself and finishing in the top 10 like I want to. And this is the story of everybody's 100-mile experience. Really, when it comes down to it, it's really rare that you ever meet anybody that has a perfect 100-mile race every time they race it. And so I started to play through the positives in my mind and think about what can I be thankful for, and, you know, what are the good things that are going on. And so I started to do that. I thought, you know, I'm still able to move forward. It hurts every step, but I can move forward. I have this great crew. all I have to do is go 4 miles an hour and I'm still going to get a sub 24 buckle, which is, you know, really the goal of the 100-mile distance. And so I came in the next aid station. I got taped up. That definitely took the edge off of things. I took some Tylenol. That helped a little bit too. And somewhere in there, my pacer, David, he just injected a ton of positive reinforcement and just said, why not go for it, Sally? You know, the taping helped a little bit, and there's still so much race left. We were at mile 62 at this point, so I had 38 more miles to run. And somewhere, something deep inside just kind of clicked. I remembered the pain that I was able to endure at Angeles Crest. I thought about all the things that I could be thankful for. And then I realized at that moment, too, like, okay, my knee hurts, but, like, I can handle that. And we went on to pass, I think it was 46 people in that stretch from the start to finish. And I was able to work my way into the coveted top 10 spot, which allows me to come back next year. And I think that through that struggle that I went through, because it was such a great struggle in such a dark spot at times, but to see how it ended, I mean, it's allowed me to be so much more confident in myself and in my abilities, and has allowed me to really think about, wow, what else am I capable of? If I can overcome that, what else can I do? And so overall, it was a good experience, but probably the toughest one yet, even more than the fracture.
Wow, that's pretty incredible stories right there. And each one I feel like is a gem in itself. I can't wait for you to write a book someday of all this. Yeah. Now, if you are planning on returning to Western States next year, which it sounds like you are, tell me three things you would do differently in your training or preparation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think, this year it's so different because I don't have to qualify for a race. So definitely my training will be different because it will be my A race of 2015. Although it's in the middle of the year, it's at the end of June. I will be able to have the luxury, and I do call it a luxury, to really just focus on that race and have all of my training be focused on the 100-mile distance as opposed to the 50-mile distance. I signed up for 250-mile races before Western States, and both of them were Montreal Ultra Cup races, and the idea was to place in the top three to earn a spot to go to Western States. So now I don't have to do that anymore. So my training will be solely focused on 100 miles and just getting really strong and always working on my climbing. I'd say I'm a better downhill runner than I am a climber, and that was definitely something that I improved upon going into Western States, but it's always something that I know I can work more on. The second thing that I would do better, as far as racing goes, the beginning of Western States, you go up this 3.5-mile climb. You're basically going up like a ski lift. It's called the escarpment. And, I've talked to different people, and some people walk every step, some people walk run. I think I took it too leisurely. I would have liked to get up a little bit quicker, but I think I was hesitant about going out too fast, and, by the time I got to this top, I genuinely thought there was more to climb, and I thought there would be more of an aggressive incline somewhere, and there wasn't. And so I got to the top a little bit disappointed in myself, like, whoa, that was it. I trained on much more intense inclines. I trained to be able to at least run hike that a little bit better than I did. So that's the second thing. The third thing would probably be, I know I really pushed it hard at the end of that race. I was racing up until mile 99, actually, like literally racing with a girl. I was actually in ninth place up until mile 99. So it was crazy. But I think I would, strategy-wise, I would like to run that last portion a little bit faster. I really think I can. Now that I have a whole idea of how that race goes, I think I can approach it with much more confidence.
That's awesome. I'm really excited to see how that develops over this next year.
Thank you.
In the running world, who would you consider your biggest inspiration, whether it be a coach, a friend, someone you haven't met, someone who's deceased, anyone?
Let's see. My biggest inspiration. You know, I'd have to say I've never been awestruck by like celebrities or people that just seem so untouchable. And I'd say that even though the trail community is so close and tight knit and very family like, which I so love, the ones that inspire me the most are the ones that are the most real. And I'd have to say, because I have such a great crew of guys that I train with, they're really the ones that inspire me. They love all different distances. All of them live normal lives. They have full-time jobs. They have families and, you know, children. And to see them get out into the mountains and do what they do day in and day out, it just inspires me to do the same thing. And training with guys, I train the guys on my crew, it's all guys. There's no other girls in there. They've made me stronger. They've pushed me and have pushed me to believe in myself. And so I too want to be like that to others. They've just inspired me to be better just across the board. And then I'd say primarily, you know, outside of the running community, you know, my mom has always been a huge inspiration, just her strength. Anytime that I've hit a low spot or I've come to places where I just don't feel like I have the strength to go on, I remember her. She did so much in her last months of life that both physically and mentally just inspired me and has really propelled me to really believe that I too can be strong. So
it's pretty cool that you started athletics with soccer, with that team atmosphere, and now you've come full circle with the Nike Trail team. And so tell me, how did you get synced up with Nike? How did that connection happen?
You know, it was a complete shock and surprise. One day I was just sitting, you know, working. I think I was just filling out training programs online, and I got an email from a contact form from my website, and I opened it up and I was like, oh gosh, this is spam. But it was who is now my manager. It was the trail manager asking me if I had a sponsor or anybody that was sending me gear or anybody that I was running for. And I immediately took the email and I forwarded it to the guys on my crew. And I thought, do you guys think this is legit? Should I respond to it? And all of them were like, yes, respond. What are you talking about? You gotta write this guy back. And so over the course of not less than 48 hours, I corresponded with this guy and we went back and forth with, you know, different questions. We talked on the phone. He sent me a contract. I, you know, reviewed that, and I was signed, and with a couple days they flew me up to Nike. There was a trail summit up there, so I got to meet most of my teammates and meet with the Nike running department, and they allowed us just to talk about the trail running community, and they wanted our insights, and it was pretty awesome. The experience was surprising. It was quick. It happened so quick, and it's been pretty incredible ever since. So huge blessing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Another element of your life, not only are you racing, but you're also coaching. When did you know you wanted to become a coach, and how has that evolved your own running to be a coach?
You know, I actually knew I always wanted to be a coach or some type of teacher, probably when I was in high school. And so when I was in high school, I actually started coaching or assistant coaching and being a counselor at soccer camps. And I continued doing that for... oh man, I did that for about 8 or 9 years. And then I'm also a personal trainer. But I started basically coaching people in running and fitness. It's been about 10 years now. And really the desire is just at the root of my heart. I just love people. And I love seeing people that are passionate about reaching a goal, that are going after a dream. I love being able to help people reach that, to be a part of someone's journey. It excites me. It inspires me, whether it's someone that wants to run their first 5K or run their first 100 mile or complete their first triathlon. It has been a huge privilege to be able to coach so many people. And I've been able to do a little bit overseas and just around the country. Currently, I have a pretty big online coaching program, and I'm able to coach people in other countries and around this country. And it is such a joy. And it balances out my life. Like I said earlier, you know, running can, you can get really consumed with just your own running and with your goals. And I always want to make sure that my life never goes in that way, that whatever it is that I do, that I'm giving back and that I'm sharing that experience, that I'm encouraging others, because there's going to come a day when I don't compete anymore. And there's going to come a day when maybe I'm injured for a while and I don't run. And if those things make me sad, then it's probably showing me that I've built up my joy in everything that revolves around me. And I don't want that. I want it to, my life to be balanced in such a way that it's fulfilled because of what I can give back to others and, you know, not just another medal for crossing another finish line.
Definitely. So. In your journey of giving back, another element of that is you're a mother to two beautiful children.
Thank you.
What kind of advice would you give to people out there, parents, who want to be able to balance their training with being parents?
Okay. Yeah. That, you know, I'll be just completely candid here. I do not have it figured out. You know, I'd say, you know, some people that follow me on social media, I'll get comments sometimes like, wow, how do you do it all? Or, you know, it seems like you have everything so figured out, right? And I really hope I don't really send that message, because I don't. I mean, I got dirty dishes piled up in my sink, and I'm never on top of the laundry. And, you know, my schedule changes from week to week. And I actually think that is the key. I learned quickly after I had my daughter. My kids are 6 and 8 years old, got Mackenzie and then Isaiah. But I learned about a year after Mackenzie was born that I could very easily run myself ragged trying to be super mom or trying to impress and please everyone around me with my mommy skills or how, you know, how we're supposed to do things. And I had to decide, I'm going to raise my kids and focus on our family with what works for us and what is going to bring the most joy and fulfillment. And part of that is allowing yourself to proceed with grace every single day, to give grace and allow yourself grace for yourself. And so I do not have a set schedule at all for weeks. You know, even as a professional runner, my training schedule changes from week to week. So sometimes I'll have 4 days during a week where I run every morning at 5 a.m. Sometimes my runs are at 10 o'clock at night after the kids go to bed. Right now it's summertime, and so my kids are out of school. So my schedule is insane because, you know, it's about, you know, one, you want to create these fun memories and you have all day with your kids. When they're in school, it's a lot easier because I run my own business from home. I can drop them off at school and get my runs done. But it's being okay with that. It's being okay with not being married to a certain schedule and thinking that you can't do it if you don't stick to that schedule. So I look at each day with what it is that I have to do, what's on the kids' schedule, what do I got to do around the house, what's on my work schedule. And it's kind of like Tetris. I just fit everything in. And sometimes that requires that I get up at 4 a.m. Sometimes it requires that that I go to bed early if I know the next day is going to be even longer. So it's just, it's being disciplined and wise with your time. I probably don't do a lot of the same things that I would say a lot of moms do in my neighborhood. I don't have like a ton of shows. I don't watch TV typically. I don't do a lot of maybe even the usual things I should. I don't get manicures and pedicures. I don't get my hair done. I don't go shopping. You have to really pick and choose where you're going to spend the time and where it is going to be most beneficial to your goals. And so I have goals in mind, and what is it that I need to do in order to meet those goals, but still have that balance in my life. So You know, there's some days where I plan, okay, I'm going to get this 8 miles in, and I'm only able to get in five, and that's okay. We just readjust for the next day. I guess my overall advice to parents is, one, don't ever say that you can't do it because you're too busy, because we are all busy. We are all busy all the time, and it only increases with age. I like to joke around sometimes with my clients when we talk about schedules, and I say that I'll rest when I'm dead. But you know, it's being okay with, okay, I'm going to rework my schedule if I need to. And if you really love something, then you're going to make it happen. And so, you know, and don't feel like that your schedule has to look like everyone else's, or that you have to be comparing your life to others. I think that's the greatest danger. You know, I talk to runners all the time that they say, well, I can't do this because I'm not like so-and-so, and she gets all this free time, or, you know, her job is only like this, or they don't have kids. It doesn't matter. If you have kids, you work 70 hours a week, you can still do it. It can be done. So.
Amen to that. Something you did get to fit in today, I know, is heated yoga.
Yes.
Tell listeners about how you started practicing yoga, and how does that complement your training, especially recovering from a race like Western States?
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, Julia, because I know that you are a yoga instructor, and I will say I have a love-hate relationship with it, because I like to move. I like to get up in the mountains and be outside and exploring and climbing, and I have more of a restless nature like that. So in the past, yoga has always and only been part of my training when I'm injured. So if I'm injured, then I'll do yoga. It's kind of like, well, you should have been doing this earlier, and now you didn't, and now you have to. But, you know, there's something about I like to do hot yoga. And sometimes when I get into more stressful seasons in my life, I notice, and even if it's an emotional or mentally stress at work type thing, not just intense training, I notice I get really, my body locks up, like my shoulders are super tight, you know, my hip flexors are tight, my back is tight, and it starts to really affect me, my training, in negative ways, and just even my personality, like I'm kind of irritable. And so yoga, it's just been a good time. It kind of forces me to be still when I don't want to be still. It forces me to stay on my little mat. And that's good for me. I think that is good. Not everything that we like doing is only good for us. Or actually, how should I say that? There are some things that we don't like doing that are very good for us, and yoga is one of them. And I'll tell you what, I've done 6 sessions in the past 7 days, and my body just it feels amazing. I had some really extreme tightness that I've been able to work out. I was a gymnast for 10 years, and so I have kind of some unusual things going on in my body where I'm over flexible in some areas. And so, like, normal running stretches don't always work for me. I have to have, like, really deep, deep, deep stretching. And so the hot yoga really helps with that. It keeps me mobile. It keeps me loose. And like I said, it forces me to be still and calm. And just, it's a great way to just start my day, you know, like that. So, like, yesterday I had a 17-mile run. I was really tight when I woke up. And so I knew, you know what, there's a yoga class at 7:30. We're going to do that, and then we're going to do our run later in the day. And my run was so much better because of it. So I've grown to have an appreciation and a respect for it. And hopefully that'll increase. I'll be a little bit more positive about it. But I do recommend it to my clients. I do recommend it to people. It's there's a lot of benefits to it. It's, you know, specifically for runners, as you know. I know you could talk about it for days.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool that you can be so honest and frank about it. I mean, I think a lot of people have a love-hate relationship with yoga and with running, for that matter, both of those
Absolutely.
Activities, for sure. Now, yeah. Looking ahead to the rest of the summer, the fall, what are you excited about? What should we keep our eyes open?
immediately, my buddy and who's also my crew, filmmaker Billy Yang, and you can actually go to his page on Facebook, Billy Yang Films, and be updated about this, what I'm going to talk about. He has for the last, gosh, I want to say it's been 7 months now, has been working on a film that is based around my journey to Western States 100. And it's probably the first time where it's definitely a journey to the race, but there's other parts in there about my life that I'm really candid and open and raw about that he documents and works into this film. It's going to be like a short film, like a 30-minute film, but that we will be doing a live screening in LA in the next couple weeks, and I'm really excited about it. Really, I'm excited for him because he's so passionate about what he does. He's a very good friend of mine. He's incredibly talented. He's put out a couple really great little short 5 and 10 minute films on local races and just getting to the heart of people. And so I'm excited to see how this is going to propel him in his passion.
Will this video be available if you're unable to go to the live screening?
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to be formatted just yet, if it's just going to be a download or an actual DVD. That is something that he is deciding. And I think, again, that's why I mentioned his Facebook page. He updates that all the time, so he'll have all the details on it. The film is called Western Time. And again, it's about the Western States 100. The second thing I'm super excited about is I'm going back to that race that I got disqualified from in 24 days. It's in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, Run Rabbit Run 100. And I feel a lot fitter and better going into this race, actually more than Western States. So I'm really excited to race again. And then there's plans and hopefully to go run the Grand Canyon. I've always wanted to run the Grand Canyon, and so hopefully I'll do that, and then I'll finish off the year with the North Face 50-mile championship in San Francisco. So racing-wise, that's what I'm super, super excited for. And other things, I'm getting my website revamped. That's super exciting, and I'm doing some, I have some new programs and clinics and other things that I've been working on. So keeping really busy right now. And I think I had mentioned this maybe in a couple other interviews, but I've been working on a book for about a year and a half. And I'm really, really hoping, I'm praying that I can get it done before 2014 is through. But yeah, lots of projects going on, lots of exciting things in the little bit of year that we have left.
Awesome. I can't wait to watch it all happen. To Thank close you. Up our interview, I have a few fun either-or questions.
Okay.
Smoothies or juices?
What was that?
Smoothies or juices?
Oh, smoothies. Absolutely. Green smoothie, for sure.
Sunrise or sunset?
Oh, sunrise is the mark of all things new.
Would you rather fly or be invisible as your superpower?
Oh, fly, for sure.
And the last one is tea or coffee?
Oh, man. Tea's so much healthier, but man, there's nothing like a good cup of coffee with a friend. I love that. It's a symbol of socialness for me. I love it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sally, for sharing your story on the Running on Om podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to episode 71 of the Running on Om podcast with Sally McRae, professional trail ultra runner, endurance sports coach, and mother. If you'd like to connect with Sally and the Running on Om community, you can find us on runningonom.com, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Also, please consider leaving a review on iTunes if you've listened to more than 3 podcasts. It will help more like-minded people find the Running on Om podcast on iTunes, and literally takes less than 2 minutes. Feel free to comment or ask any questions on the Running on Om Facebook page. I'd love to hear from you. This is your host, Julia Hanlon, and I hope you have a beautiful day.